Unrelentlessly positive.
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever.
It indicates.
Indicative?
Hey, can we focus?
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome to the second hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and it is Thursday. So that means we have our weekly segment, Public Service Announcement with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, where we tackle some women's health, some general health, but in general, we talk about health issues and rely on her medical expertise. Dr. Lyerly, how are you doing this week?
So good. Talking about the stuff that nobody else really wants to talk about, but everybody wants to know about. That's what we do here.
That is what we do here. How do you, what would you classify that as? Just like health in general?
I think it is, because so many of the things that we're afraid to talk about affect our general health. All of the, you know, dicey women's health stuff, like sex.
Sex.
But I mean, it affects so many different parts of your physical life, your social life, your mental life, like you name it. So
I do,
let's talk about it.
I do. And I've said this to both Jane and you off air, but I'll say it on air because I don't have a filter. What I love is, you know, a lot of the callers we've get in the show, like we have a pretty, I think our audience is pretty split between men and women. And I just love the idea of when we're talking about like a lot of sexual reproductive health and
menopause
and periods and pregnancy, the amount of men out there that we're reaching with this conversation. Because I'll say any of those things without blushing once.
But I think a lot of men do want to know, like they really want to understand what's happening, but they are the least likely people to actually ask those questions because, I mean, for so many reasons, like maybe they feel they shouldn't be, or maybe they don't feel like they have the right place to ask those questions. So here, we are the place.
We are the
place.
Send
us messages. Call us. We'll answer your questions.
Exactly.
We're not afraid.
You can always text us any of your questions. You don't have to be on the phone. You don't have to go on record. We won't even have to say your name.
Absolutely not.
844-967-2789. You're always welcome to text us or call us with your questions or email us with your questions at asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us. So, topics for this week. Let's start off with some topics that are specific, some headlines that are specific to Wisconsin and also specific to me, because as we've said multiple times, I am pregnant. And news story, pregnant women exposed to higher levels of PFAS, more likely to have children with a high BMI. That is interesting. So they're linking PFAS to weight?
To childhood obesity, which is epidemic proportions and has been growing for the past few decades. This is hot off the presses. I literally saw this on an email as I was looking through my notes and getting ready for the show this morning. So the difference that they saw with these women who were exposed to PFAS was nominal. It wasn't huge. But when you extrapolate this to a population size, it has the potential to be a real key factor, a key player in the problem that is this expanding childhood obesity issue.
That is, and was there any explanation of what it is about, and is it, or if it expands to children who then are exposed to PFAS and that likelihood of having a high BMI, or is it just specifically while you're pregnant?
This one specifically looked at moms who were exposed to PFAS and the risk for having children later who developed childhood obesity. And, you know, that could certainly be multifactorial. It's not a, you can't pin it on just PFAS. I mean, there are lots of different reasons we believe why childhood obesity is increasing. But PFAS is a problem in so many different ways, but it's subtle. You know, it's hard for us to really wrap our heads around this because the water tastes fine. It seems fine. But scientifically, we know that this is a huge problem in many different arenas. This is just another consideration that we really hadn't thought about before.
But also the thing with, I think when I think about PFAS, it's our water for sure. But with specifically being a woman, when it comes to forever chemicals, is how much of it is in our makeup? Mm-hmm. Like waterproof mascara, that is literally like anything that is water resistant, waterproof, and the stuff that we put on our skin so it doesn't smudge and it doesn't run when we cry is it's PFAS. It's that is what PFAS is. It's water resistant, retardant, like fire retardant. You know, it's stuff that creates a barrier, and it's things that we have willingly put on our skin and in our body, not realizing what the long-term ramifications of it are going to be. And I don't know if there's been studies that women have higher rates of it, but when you look at some of the products that we use and what we're now realizing goes into them, I wouldn't be terribly surprised if we are.
Well, and can I just say this about waterproof mascara? That stuff is like concrete. And the fact that you can't get it off
without a vat of Vaseline
is a sign that something is not good.
But when you are just figuring out how to put mascara on, when you're learning about, you just think all of those products are going to be safe because they're out there and they're available. So why wouldn't they be safe? But I think this is a really great point, and I'd love to explore this. Maybe we could even do this on a future show where we talk about, it's not just PFAS, it's all these other chemicals and the way they test these chemicals that we put in, like on our lips. Our lips are some of the most vulnerable areas on our body. The skin is so thin and we absorb so much through our lips, and we're putting toxic chemicals on our lips so that they can be pinker and prettier. We could do better. There are better alternatives out there,
which we can talk about. All right, but the next headline I wanted to talk about is there's been a breakthrough for endometriosis, right? So first, let's just start. What is it?
So endometriosis is something that affects up to 10% of women in the United States. It's common, and it often manifests as really painful periods or heavy periods, or maybe down the road when you're trying to get pregnant, infertility. It is really a confusing disease. Ultimately, what it means is that the tissue that's supposed to be inside of your uterus, which is really special tissue that responds to hormonal stimulation, this tissue somehow gets outside of the uterus into weird places. Sometimes it's in common places like on the ovaries or like behind the uterus. By the way, did you know your uterus is kind of like a puppet? It moves around. Did you know this?
Like a sock puppet or like a Muppet? What kind of puppet are we talking about?
Then I want mine to be Jan from the Muppet Show, if that's what we're going with.
What do you mean it's like a puppet?
Like a Muppet. So it moves, because think about it. So your uterus is anchored down at the bottom by the cervix. So that's where it's kind of like stuck to the rest of you. But it has to have the space to be able to expand. Like you have a widely expanded uterus right now, Kristen.
I do. Everyone who saw me over the weekend was like, oh, you're pregnant. I was like, yeah, you can see it now.
So in order to give it that room to grow, the top of the uterus has to have a lot of flexibility. So when it's not pregnant and it's little, it can like flop around inside of you. I've actually done a C-section for someone where the uterus had twisted 180 degrees. And when we did her C-section, we made the incision on the backside of her uterus. And after the baby was out, we just turned it back around again the way that it was supposed to be. Crazy.
Does that a complicated situation for her?
Well, not surprisingly, she was having a hard time having her baby.
I would think.
And we didn't know that her uterus was rotated because you can't really tell on ultrasound. So it just seemed like she had a normal pregnancy. And we went back to do the C-section. And sure enough, it was rotated around. And because it was twisted like that, it couldn't open up and the baby couldn't make his way through. So that was how that baby came out. But anyway, I'm getting distracted. So your uterus, which is like a puppet so that it can move around a lot, if that tissue from inside the uterus gets implanted in places outside of the uterus, like behind, between the uterus and the rectum, that tissue still responds to your hormones. So when your estrogen level is high during your regular cycle, it causes that tissue to react and to create that menstrual type blood that if it's in your uterus, you shed it. But if it's not in your uterus, there's no place for it to go. So it just continues to grow and get sticky and gum things together. And so sometimes when I am looking inside of someone and they have endometriosis, their pelvis can be entirely locked up with this this tissue, the scar tissue and this endometriosis tissue that has the ovaries kind of locked in and the back of the uterus locked down. It can be incredibly painful.
Wow. Okay. And so what is the news? What is the breakthrough for it?
So the breakthrough is that there are different types of endometriosis. And this is another part of what makes it so confusing. I could look inside of someone's body and they could have the worst endometriosis I've ever seen, but be totally asymptomatic. Or I could look inside and see hardly anything, but just do some random biopsies just to be on the safe side and find out that they have endometriosis. So it's very confusing. And what they found with this Australian study is that there are different types of endometriosis. So they took every type that is known and they were able to replicate that in the lab. What that does for us as scientists is it gives us something to aim treatment toward. So like, for example, breast cancer. It used to be that all breast cancer was felt to be the same. You have breast cancer, it's breast cancer, we treat breast cancer. But now what we do is we know the hormonal makeup. We know what the breast cancer responds to. So they target the treatment specifically to the type of breast cancer that we have. And we've increased the survivability of breast cancer because we've been able to target these treatments. So hopefully down the road, and this is a far down the road thing, so things haven't changed yet for the treatment of endometriosis, but hopefully down the road, we'll have targeted treatments and we'll be better able to treat endometriosis.
Got it. Good to know. All right. Well, how much time do we have, Jane?
We have 90 seconds.
Do we have time to get one comment?
It's going to be real quick. This is Michael from Eagle. Thank you so much for calling, Michael. What do you want to say?
Yeah. First time caller. I just kind of wanted to comment on what you guys were first talking about with like the forever chemicals and like the PFAS and like I worry about like the more things that I see about that like, so I'm a millennial and I worry about that being like our generation's version of like what boomers are going through with like lead poisoning and from the leaded gas and everything like that. And I worry about like, you know, us just now figuring out and like how much it's like inundated our water system and everything else. And like you said, cosmetics and all that, but that's going to be like what we find out later has caused a lot of issues long term. And so that's my fear. And just I guess I kind of want the doctor's comments on that, what she thought of that.
Well, we got to go to a break right now, but thanks so much for the call and the question. We'll come back with that when we come back as far as what that could mean, PFAS can mean for us long term. But also I want to get your opinion on how serious we should take Surgeon General warnings when it comes to public health. So this is Public Service Announcement on As Goes Wisconsin with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Kristen Bry, and Jane Matinair. We will be back right after the break. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we are doing our weekly segment, Public Cervix Announcement, with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who is our health guru. Basically, also here and on twice a week with Pat Kreitlow on Up North News.
Usually on Mondays, we just do fun stuff. And then on Thursdays, we do like an upstream health piece where we talk about some of the upstream things that affect our own personal health. Stuff like PFAS.
There you go.
And you talk about upstream.
Which is coming back to the question we had at the end, or I guess kind of the topic in general.
From Michael in Eagle.
In Eagle, about what is this our generation's lead pipes? Of, you know, lead pipes were everywhere and what that, and I mean, granted, it's still a thing. It's still a thing. Just look at Flint or Milwaukee. But long term, are we still kind of just only scratching the surface for what kind of damage this is going to do to people?
Hey, I feel like this is bigger than lead pipes.
Really?
Because lead pipes, you could go in and replace the pipes and you were done with the problem. But we have polluted our groundwater and most of us have been exposed to PFAS. It's just people in places with higher concentrations that are going to have more of the effects. And, you know, we're talking about childhood obesity, but PFAS has been associated with increased cholesterol levels, changes in liver enzymes, decreased birth weight, increased risk of preeclampsia and blood pressure problems in pregnancies, decreased vaccine response in children, it affects our immune system, and increased risks of kidney and testicular cancers, to name a few. And we don't, all the data's not in. I mean, we're just starting to get the results of the studies that we started a few years ago. So there's so much more to learn about PFAS. Michael was right on point. This is a really big deal.
Well, and where my mind just went when you said preeclampsia and some of the complications it can give for having a baby, and knowing the parts of Wisconsin that are dealing with this the most right now, which there's a lot of parts of Wisconsin that are dealing with this, but it is in more rural areas, which are, we're also having a OBGYN crisis. Like we have, right, we've talked about this before. Like there's certain swaths of Wisconsin where like you have to go very far to find someone who can help you deliver your baby, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you have a higher risk pregnancy, you're going to need more care, more regular visits, more ultrasounds. And when you deliver, you're probably going to need to deliver at a higher acuity center. And how far away is Marshfield or Green Bay or the Twin Cities? If you live in the north, the northwest, you don't have a lot of options. That's really hard on you. It's hard on your family. It's expensive. I mean, you know, it's complicated. And these are all things that in many cases are preventable if we can be responsible, make responsible decisions, have responsible legislators who are actually thinking about the people as they're putting together legislation about PFAS, instead of just throwing money at the problem, actually, you know, creating programs that will eliminate the problem instead of just appealing to the masses.
Oh, Kristen, a girl can dream.
You got to say it, right?
I know. All right. Well, we're not going to have enough as much time as I wanted to talk about this topic. So maybe we'll have to come back to it. But I saw this from the New York Times, and the headline was "A Half Century of Surgeon General Warnings." Public advisories from the nation's top doctor are infrequent, but sometimes become turning points in American life. And most recently, our current Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, had put out a Surgeon General's warning about social media. And I think that's the most recent one, and loneliness, right? Those are the two kind of most recent ones. And it's interesting because the article goes through some of the major turning points that past Surgeon General warnings have created in the culture. So it's like cigarettes and AIDS and violence on TV and video games. And so like as a doctor, as a medical doctor, but you also have an MPH, right? Some master's in public health. Like,
yeah.
How serious, when these things come out, like are they a big deal or are they just kind of another headline as far as how they get implemented into the culture and like what we do and do not do?
Hey, they're a big deal. So the Surgeon General's office produces reports, and they are in different tiers. The reports, calls to actions, and advisories, which are the warnings. And these are intended to inform and improve the public health of people living in the United States. So like I mentioned, the advisories are those warnings. And I think the most prominent type of advisory is, you think about like on the back of a cigarette package, there's the Surgeon General's warning about cigarettes. And that was, I mean, that was 1964. That was one of the earliest examples. And look what happened in 1964, the Surgeon General put that information out there. In 1965, we started to see our leaders, Congress acted. In 1970, there was another big action. And we've seen the number of cigarette-related deaths decrease and the usage decrease over time. Of course, cigarettes are the most preventable way of decreasing long-term health effects, including cancers and lung disease and secondary health effects. So this is something that was just, it was a no-brainer. The stuff that Dr. Murthy is working on now is really innovative and very different. And when you hear him talk about it, it's really personal to him. A lot of it is related to, you know, COVID. When he lived through COVID, he really found himself feeling isolated and thinking about how he and his children were interacting with social media. And I think that was part of what drove this kind of subtle, like cigarettes are kind of in your face. The social media stuff is more subtle, more complicated, multifactorial, but no less important and no less of a crisis here in this country.
And it's interesting because I know we only have 1 minute left, but this analogy just kind of popped in my head. Like I've been pretty honest of past life, had an eating disorder when I was young, and something with an eating disorder, unlike cigarettes or drinking, like you have to eat food, right? You have to learn how to live with food. And to a certain extent, with like social media and like the effects it's having on our brains and on our kids, like, we're not just going to ban social media or how we like interact with the internet. So it's like this gray area of trying to live with it, but put healthy boundaries around it, maybe put regulations on it. And I don't know. That's where I'm going to end us for today, because we're coming up in a break. It's never long enough. Dr. Lyerly, as always, so much fun to have you here. We need a longer segment, I think. I'll see you next week.
This is why we talk about these things, right? Because they matter. Thank you for the opportunity, as always.
All right. When we come back, a Wisconsin beer update with Wisconsin's beer baron, Chris Drosner. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, and we are here with... It's been a while. We've missed a month. But we... Oh, you are... Chris, can I hear you?
Uh-oh.
Oh, there he is. Now I can hear you.
Okay.
But
all right, great.
We are here for our monthly Wisconsin beer news update with Wisconsin's beer baron, Chris Drosner, who is the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine and also the author of the Beer Baron column for the Wisconsin State Journal. But it's been, we didn't do last month, so I'm very excited to have you back on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
So, it's like beer festival time, right? The summer is here. The beer gardens are aplenty. It feels like there's a new one popping up every week, but there's also lots of beer events happening this summer. And you wrote something about this recently. And so what are your kind of takeaways as far as entering into the summer season of beer events?
Yeah, it's summer is a really big season, obviously, for beer. I mean, I think people just kind of that they drink beer. But also, like, you know, in the industry, it's a big time. There's a lot of volume moving, and you know, and these events that kick up are kind of, you know, part of that framework. And yeah, I mean, this is the right time to get outside and you know, spend a few hours in a park or whatever, drinking beer. And it's been an interesting, you know, since the pandemic kind of shut a lot of these events down, it's been interesting to see how they've kind of ramped up, and it's pretty clear that the beer festival like thing is a little bit less than it was.
I think
it's probably coming from both ways. Like, I think there's the interest in like exploring and trying a whole bunch of different new beers is down a little bit. And I think there's some fatigue on the brewery side of things too. Like, you know, taking an extra day to go out on a Saturday to, you know, kind of, you know, beer festivals are always tricky because there's these two things, right? Like when I go to a beer festival, I want to try a whole bunch of different new beers and sample and talk about beer with people. But there's a lot of people who go to beer festivals just to get drunk. And
no,
that side what? Of things that
it's like when they
come
go,
on,
you don't think people go wine tasting to just try a new wine and not get drunk?
Right. Maybe that's been implicit the whole time, but I think for a long time, breweries did see them as legitimate, like kind of avenues to convert new customers and reach new people that they wouldn't be reaching otherwise through their tap rooms or, you know, at sampling events at stores or whatever. And I think at this point, like, people know that craft beer is a thing. You're not going to be really turning that thing on. You're not really going to be like, especially for the older breweries, like anybody who's at these things pretty much knows the big
who's
state
gonna
breweries.
Be there.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some value in kind of the newcomers and trying new things and that sort of thing. But I think that there's a lot of fatigue in the industry side of things. So, and I think we're seeing that kind of on both sides. Like, you know, the big one of the summer every year in Wisconsin is the Great Taste of the Midwest in Madison. That's the second Saturday in August, and that for the first time, that I've ever been covering it for 15 plus years or whatever, they had tickets that were not sold. The tickets are sold in-person events way ahead. And those ended, I mean, they will sell the tickets. It will sell out. But that those got plowed into this online lottery system that they do. And this is the best. It is an amazing festival. Like, it is truly exploratory. There's like more than 100 breweries. It's in a great setting. And I think those kind of things are, and brewers are still excited about events like that. So I think what you're kind of like where the way that I'm thinking about festivals this summer and probably for the near future is, what are the festivals that really bring something special, either a focus on a certain type of beer, like, you know, the Third Space IPA festival in August, or Lager and Friends, which was a couple of weeks ago here in Milwaukee as well. You know, so, or is there a really special setting or something else that really sets it apart? Like, you know, next weekend is the Door County Beer Festival, which is a really nice one in Bailey's Harbor. And then also the Wisconsin Beer Lovers Festival in Glendale at Bayshore, which is a fundraiser for the Wisconsin Brewers Guild. So, you know, those are the kind of breweries festivals where breweries are excited to come out and, you know, kind of deal with all the drunk people and, mm-hmm. and the, you know, I mean, from that side of the tent, it's kind of a pain in the butt, you know,
yeah.
Like all these people who are like, what's your lightest beer or what's your highest ABV beer? And all the, you know, it becomes a little bit of a S show.
It's,
you know what I
mean. Well, it's that, but I'm trying to think of days when I worked in tech and we had to go to like, you know, like conferences and you had to, it was like, you'd be on the floor with your booth and people would come around and they'd want free stuff and you'd have to talk to them about your like SaaS software. Yeah. But most of the time they weren't that interested and it wasn't a real lead whatsoever. But I'm trying to think of like, that has to be the equivalent to people who work at the breweries who are like, well, we're going to go to this event. People are going to kind of come up. It's probably a little bit more fun than talking about software, but still, it's like you're dealing with drunk people. You're dealing with people who may or may not, like, they're just trying to get their, yeah. they show you their wristband, and it's still a job. It sounds more fun than probably other jobs, but it's still, you know, probably not the most glamorous part.
Yeah, and I think one thing that sets the better beer festivals apart from just the others is who you're talking to. If you do want to talk about beer at that tent, right? Like a lot of these, it'll just be a volunteer pouring or somebody who doesn't really know anything about the beer that they're pouring. And, you know, that's kind of a bummer, you know?
Yeah.
I think that people want to be able to ask about, hey, this is interesting. Like, why is this beer the way it is or something? And have a good answer for it. And, you know, so I think some of those festivals where you actually have brewer staff on site, that's really where I'm spending my money. And I mean, like, let's be honest, like these things are not cheap. They can be the going rate this year is around $50. And then you can go up to 75 for like a lot of them have like these VIP hours where it's like exclusive access and extra beers and swag and stuff. So,
and then you got to pay for the Uber afterwards because don't drink and drive.
Absolutely not.
So then I guess, Chris Drosner, what would you recommend? So knowing that we have a statewide audience now, what are like your top three beer events you think people should check out this summer?
Well, I think those two next weekend are really, those are on the good, definitely on the good list. That's the Door County Beer Festival in Bailey's Harbor next Saturday, June 17th. And then also the Wisconsin Beer Lovers Festival, which is also the same Saturday in Glendale. Those are two great ones. I mean, you know, I'm going to mention, I used to not tell people to try to go to the Great Taste of the Midwest in Madison because it is, you know, you have to get your tickets in May and it takes a lot of doing to go to that festival, but it is the best festival I've ever been to.
Really?
And that's really the highlight. Yeah, it is. It really is. And I've been to Great American Beer Festival, the big one out in Denver and a lot of other ones. And this is the big daddy. This is the one where if you are a beer person, this is the one you have to go to because all the breweries save all their cool beers for this event. Sometimes they'll brew special beers just for this event. It is much, you get a lot of breweries that you will not see on shelves in Wisconsin. You know, you have, I think they had like 130 or something last year, maybe more. So that's just breweries. I mean, there's more than you can go to, 100%. And, you know, it's the atmosphere is super celebratory. The brewers actually want to come to this one because they might be coming from Kansas or Ohio or wherever. And this is like a big deal. They get to go to Madison, have, you know, party it up, have a good time, and then hang out in this beautiful lakeside park. It's at Olin Park in Madison. Yeah. And be around people who are super excited about beer. The bar of entry has always made it more less of the drunk S show and more of the kind of discussion and the positive aspects of beer festivals. But you know, the looser ticket thing is changing, and you can go. I used to not advise people to just go and figure it out, but you can go and figure it out now. Like there are tickets that are being sold, they're on site, people selling tickets, extras that they have or whatever, on site, right outside the gate. Get a hotel room and give it a shot.
It is.
And if not, that whole night is fun. It's a good time of year.
There's a lot of energy captured in Madison, but that's a good point. What you said about to a certain extent, having a higher bar for the barrier to entry being the cost. Cause immediately I was just thinking about the classic story from 20 years ago with Martini Fest at the Art Museum in Milwaukee, when it was basically free to go. And they thought let's have college students drink open bar martinis at an art museum. What could go wrong?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's not even the cost. It's you have to just plan ahead a lot more, and you have to know about it and make plans and that sort of thing. And that's still an effect. I mean, that's still a factor. And it's just really well run. It's put on by the Madison, Homebrewers, Guild. And so they're it's a nonprofit, so they're not trying to, these for-profit ones are a little dicey, but I think the vibe is just very good. It's like beer Christmas, basically.
Absolutely. All right. We're talking to Chris Drosner, who is the executive editor at Milwaukee Magazine and the author of the Beer Baron column for the Wisconsin State Journal. So also just, I guess, in general, with the summer being here, what makes a good summer beer? Are there any new summer beers that you think are especially tasty that people should check out?
Yeah, I know we're a little short on time than our previous double segment.
We got three minutes. Yeah.
Okay, so New Glarus Pilsner is a Pilsner, which is one of the most approachable and kind of like beer-like styles, like for just regular beers. So they came out with a Pilsner this year that replaced one of my favorite beers, Kid Kolsch. It is really, really good. And okay, I just want to get that recommendation out there out front. I gave it 5 stars in my review. Oh, wait, maybe it was 4.5 stars earlier this spring. So it's great, as you'd expect from New Glarus. But yeah, you want to have light body, drinkability. Balance is really important between sweet and bitter. A little effervescence is good. It's got to be dry. It's like that's an underrated aspect of kind of, it's one of the reasons why hard seltzer, I think, has been a really popular thing the last few years for summers, which is, we haven't been seeing as much of that lately this year, but that dry kind of, maybe a little bit of a mineral kind of finish to kind of propel you into that next sip and make you want to take that next sip. So
I seem to those are kind of things that I look for, of wanting to take the next sip.
Right. Yeah. As though I needed some excuse.
That's interesting, because I feel like when I think of summer beers, I think of Blue Moon and sweeter beers that come with a piece of fruit in it. But you're saying really more drier beers?
I mean, there's many ways to come at
that's
this.
True.
But that's really what I look for. And I tend to look for something that is when I said balance, every beer commercial talks about balance, right? But what that means is that you can especially with a craft beer, with something that's a little bit more full flavored, I want to be able to slow down and pay attention to this beer and really get something out of it. Maybe it's a delicate hop profile, or maybe it's a little bit of tartness or a little zippy bite of bitterness at the end. Something like that, that makes me, that rewards like looking closer. But I also want to just not think about that stuff and just crush it. You know, like if it's hot, it's, you know, I'm sweaty. And you know, the lawnmower beer thing.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're coming up against a break, Chris. It goes really fast whenever you're here. There's lots to talk about, but we will see you again in 1 month for another Wisconsin Beer Update. Chris Drosner is the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine and the author of the Beer Baron column for the Wisconsin State Journal. Check him out. Thank you for being here, friend.
Cheers, everyone.
All right. Well, when we come back, we will wrap up today's show. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I love beer.
Yes,
yeah. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And this show just flew right by.
It really did. It just zoomed.
And so, but yeah, so we have a funny, I'm trying to understand if this is a compliment or not.
Oh, this should be interesting.
So let me get the whole thing up because it's a bit of a mouthful. So we got a message on the live stream for Facebook, which you are also always welcome. Yesterday we had a little bit of issues with it, but most days, if you would like to watch the show instead of just listen to the show, you can do that on the YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter page at As Goes Wisconsin. And you can leave comments there. And also go back and watch the replay. Every once in a while, if I forget to turn off my mic during the break, you get to hear, as I said last
extras.
Week, to Joe Selmans, linguist from UW-Madison, yes. When we were talking about cursing, I said, for some reason, I'm totally fine not cursing on air, but off air is a different story. So you may hear some colorful language sometimes when things go wrong.
It might happen.
But we were just left a comment from Ron Legro, and I think it's a compliment.
All right, let me hear it.
I'm going to read it. You tell me if you think this is a compliment or not.
Okay.
This is from Ron. I may have developed a new health issue listening to As Goes. Like many older guys, I fall into fatigue too quickly, so several years ago, my doc prescribed 20 micrograms of vitamin B12 daily. That was enough to help me keep me convincingly spry on the basketball courts for years. Now, however, and this may be just a coincidence, after trying to keep up with your delicious but frenetic program, I visited my doc and he upped my B12 daily quota to 1,000 micrograms. Okay, then. So I'm hoping I'll be able to get through an entire As Goes Wisconsin show now without heading to the fainting couch. Well, and the 1 hour show reduction may also help, sadly. Hello, As Goes. Are we frenetic?
I don't feel we're frenetic. We can try and be less frenetic.
I like our energy.
I like, what was it, delicious and frenetic?
Delicious and frenetic.
Well, that should go on a shirt.
I think, yeah. I would love to be described as delicious but frenetic.
As Goes Wisconsin, delicious but frenetic.
And frenetic.
And frenetic.
Because frenetic's not always bad thing. Frenetic. Well, the definition of frenetic. Fast and energetic in a rather wild and uncontrolled way. I'll take that.
That is hilarious. Don't forget, you can always get in touch with us. 844-967-2789. 844-96-PARTY. You can call and or text at that same number. And you can always just send us an email. It's asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us.
Yes, and as always, if you missed any part of today's show, you can go listen to it as a podcast. Certainly download the Civic Media app. I think we had a glowing endorsement from Tom from L.A.
Yeah, that's the promo right there.
Of being able to take it wherever you want. You can listen to all the different stations, of which we now have 19 in total. We have 6 music stations across the state of Wisconsin. And let's just do this rundown right now.
Sure.
So WMDX in Madison, which is 1580 AM, 92.7. Obviously, we're recording from WAUK, the Shaw, at 540 AM, 101 FM. This is in Waukesha and hits a lot of southeast Wisconsin.
Yep.
We're also now in Racine and Kenosha on WRJN,
which has been there for a long time. We're really thrilled to be on WRJN.
So that's 1400 AM, 99.9 FM, and that's also where you'll be able to hear the Packers this fall.
Cool.
Which is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
We're also now on, as of this week, in La Crosse. Listening, we're on the Eagle, which is WLCX.
Beautiful, beautiful La Crosse.
And 1490. And obviously still over in that neck of the woods, we've been on and are still on Richland Center. WRCE, News from the Center, 1450 AM, 107.7 FM. Bull Falls Radio up in Wausau, 1230 AM, 98.9 FM. Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM, 98.3. New this week, we're in Eau Claire, 93.5 The Tap.
Hello, Jean.
Hello. Who's Jean?
Jeannie. Jeannie's a regular caller.
Oh, Jeannie's in Eau Claire.
Yeah, Jeannie's in Eau Claire.
I should have known that. I thought she was in a more rural area than...
I think she's outside of the city.
Okay. And then obviously we're up in Amory, Lake Eyre, 1260 AM, Hayward, Buzz of the North, 910 AM. And I don't know if we're talking about this other one yet. We're going to have one more.
I think we should...
We're going to keep... Since I'm going to err on the side of caution, but there's going to be one more before long that will round out all of the stations that we're on. And I... There's a reason why I don't do it daily, because there's a lot of them to call out with the numbers and the call signs and the area codes and everything. But it is so fun to be talking to so many different parts of the state. And it kind of goes back to what, again, Tom from LA said at the beginning of the show. And I think it's something I try as hard as I can, even though I live in Milwaukee, to not make this a Milwaukee-centric show.
Right.
And try to find stories of stuff that is happening across the state, either in different locations, locally, but also things that affect the entire state. Because having spent as much time as I have in Rapids and knowing the different aspects of the state, like, I do genuinely believe, like, we're all Wisconsinites. And, like, each town deserves their own recognition of things that are happening there. But also, like... the feeling of camaraderie and the feeling of like neighborliness that we all live in this state and we all live here together and we all have to work on it together. And so I'm super pumped to be in this many different markets.
Oh, absolutely. And we've said this before and we mean this quite sincerely. If there's something going on in your community that you would like us to talk about or someone in your community that you think would be great to have on the show, just let us know.
Yeah.
We really, you know, we can't be on the ground everywhere. No. We are located in southeastern Wisconsin, but that doesn't mean that we're not interested in things that are going on in Amory or Eau Claire or La Crosse or Green Bay. So you can always reach out anytime, 844-967-2789. Call or text or email us at asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us.
And with that, we will... end today's show. So thank you to everyone who called and texted and was part of the show today. We will be back tomorrow with, we're actually going to have Mike Crute from Devil's Advocates.
I am excited.
On Fridays, we're going to start collaborating, having a crossover with some of our other civic media hosts. And to kick it off with our first segment of kind of a roundup for the week of news, good, bad, and the ugly, we'll be with Mr. Mike Crute from Devil's Advocates. So that'll be at 10:30 tomorrow. And then we're going to talk to, who else do we have tomorrow?
Sherry Tussler.
Sherry Tussler is going to give us an update on food banks and what's been happening since the food share benefits shrunk. But it'll be a fun Friday. So come back tomorrow at 10 a.m. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.